The As You Wish Demon Woman. I've suddenly thought of a story of the As You Wish woman. She was a ghost that had been shattered by thunder in the Zhou Dynasty. She then practiced a kind of magic that protected her from thunder, and when she mastered it, she went around causing trouble. Later, she met me, took refuge with the Triple Jewel, and reformed herself. I could write an entire book on this. You don't have to be afraid of her. Even if she were to come here, she wouldn't harm anyone. 27 years ago, 1945, on the 12th day of the second month, I passed through the Zhou family station in Manchuria. In the town, there was a virtue society whose members met daily for lectures on morality. Since some of the members were my disciples, I would usually stay in the town for a few days when I passed through. This time, I met a Chinese astrologer who cast people's horoscopes by looking at the 8 characters, 2 for the year, 2 for the month, 2 for the day, and 2 for the hour, of their birth. His horoscopes were very efficacious. He cast my horoscope and said, "You should be an official. Why have you left home? Had you wanted to, you could have been a great official." "I haven't any idea how to be an official," I said, "but I do know how to be a Buddhist monk, and so I have left home." "What a pity," said the astrologer, and he looked at my hands. "At the very least," he said, "you could have been a top-ranking imperial scholar." "No," I said, "I couldn't even have come in last." He looked at my hands again and said, "Oh, this year something very lucky will happen to change your life." "What could that be?" I asked. "After the 10th of the next month, you will be different from now," he replied. "Different in what way?" "Right now, all the people within 1,000 li, 350 miles, believe in you. But after the 10th of next month, everyone within 10,000 li, 3,500 miles, will believe in you." "How can that be?" I asked. "When the time comes, you will know," he said. 2 days later, on the 14th or 15th of the second month, I went to the village of Xiang Bai Qi, 4th district, and stayed with my disciple, Xia Sun Xiang, who was over 60 years old and had a family of over 30 people. He was one of the richest landowners in the area and had never believed in Buddhism or anything else. But when he saw me, he believed in me and wanted to take refuge with me. He and his whole family took refuge, and every time I went to the village, I'd stay at his house. His family of over 30 was extremely happy to see me this time. I stayed with them for 10 days, and about 72 people came to take refuge. On the 25th, I set out in Mr. Shaw's cart for Shuangcheng County, since it was over 70 li, 25 miles, away. We left at 3 o'clock in the morning. Although it was early spring, the weather was bitter cold. The driver and the attendant were dressed in fur coats, trousers, and hats. Being very poor, I wore only my usual rag robe made of 3 layers of thin cotton cloth, trousers made of 2 layers of cloth, open arhat sandals with no socks, and a hat shaped like folded palms that didn't cover my ears. That was the kind of hat that Master Ji Gong wore. We rode from 3 in the morning until dawn, reaching the city at 7 in the morning. The driver and the attendant thought I would freeze to death since I was so insufficiently dressed. They had stopped to keep warm, but I had remained in the cart from the beginning of the trip. When we arrived at the eastern gate of Shuangcheng County and I got out of the cart, the driver exclaimed, "Oh, we thought surely you had frozen to death." I stayed with friends, Dharma protecting laymen, for more than 10 days, and on the 9th of the 3rd month, I returned to Shaozun Xiang's home in Xiangbaiqi. When I arrived, he told me that one of my recent disciples, the daughter of Xia Wenshan, had fallen dangerously ill. She hadn't eaten or drunk water for 6 or 7 days. She did not speak, and she looked fiercely angry, as if she wanted to beat people. Then her mother came. "Master," she said, "my daughter became very ill a few days after taking refuge. She won't talk, eat, or drink, but just glares and sticks her head up on the bed. I don't know what illness she has." I said to her, "I can't cure her, so it's useless to ask me. However, my disciple, Han Gangji, has opened his 5 eyes and knows people's past, present, and future affairs. You should ask him." Han Gangji had also taken refuge on the 24th of the 2nd month. At first, I had refused to take him as a disciple, because before I had left home, the two of us had been good friends and had worked together in the Virtue Society. After I left home and Han Gangji opened his 5 eyes, he saw that life after life I had always been his teacher, and so he wanted to take refuge with me. I said, "We're good friends. How can I take you as a disciple?" "But if I don't take refuge with you, I shall certainly fall in this life," Han Gangji said, and he knelt on the ground and refused to get up. I was just as determined not to accept him. But after perhaps half an hour, I finally said, "Those who take refuge with me must follow instructions. You have talent. You know the past, present, and future. Is it possible that it has caused you to become arrogant? Will your pride prevent you from obeying my instructions?" "Master," he said, "I'll certainly obey. If you tell me to throw myself into a cauldron of boiling water, I'll do it. If you tell me to walk on fire, I'll walk. If I get boiled or burned to death, that's all right." "You'd better be telling the truth," I said. "If I give you instructions, you can't ignore them." "No matter what it is," he said, "if you tell me to do it, I will do it, and fear no danger whatsoever." And so, Han Gangji was one of the 72 people who took refuge on the 24th. Hearing that one of my disciples was sick, I told Han Gangji, "You can diagnose illnesses. Take a look." Han Gangji sat in meditation and made a contemplative examination of the illness. Suddenly, his face blanched with terror. "Master," he said, "we can't handle this one. It's beyond our control." "What is it?" I asked. "The demon who is causing the illness is extremely violent and can assume human form to bring chaos into the world and injury to humankind." "What makes the demon so fierce?" I asked. "The demon was a ghost long ago in the Zhou Dynasty," he said. "Because it didn't behave properly, a virtuous man with spiritual power shattered it with thunder. But the ghost's spirit did not completely disperse, and it later fused into a powerful demon that could fly and vanish and appear again at will." "The demon has refined a magic weapon," he continued. "It's an exclusive anti-thunder device, a black hat made out of thin membranes that cover the bodies of newborn children. When she wears the hat, the thunder cannot hurt her, because thunder has a great aversion to filth. Westerners think that thunder has no one controlling it, and while that may be the case for ordinary thunder, there is a special kind of thunder that is used by gods to punish the goblins, demons, and ghosts who wander throughout the world. In addition to the black hat which protected her from thunder, she had refined 2 other magic weapons, 2 round balls. If she put her hat on someone, his soul will fall under her control, and he would become one of her followers. If she hit someone with one of the 2 round balls, he would immediately die. Hanganji saw that she was such a fierce demon and said, "Master, we can't handle this one." "Then what will become of the girl?" I asked. "She will certainly die. There's no way to help her," he said. "I can't allow her to die. If she weren't my disciple, I'd pay no attention. But she took refuge with me on the 24th of last month." When those people had taken refuge, I had taught them to recite the Great Compassion Mantra. I had said to them, "Each of you should learn to recite the Great Compassion Mantra. It will be of great help to you. If you are in danger and distress, and you recite it, Guanyin Bodhisattva will protect you." Since then, many of them had been reciting the Great Compassion Mantra. I said, "If she hadn't taken refuge with me, I wouldn't care whether the demon took her life or not. But she took refuge with me, so I can't allow the demon to take her life. I've got to do something." "You take care of it then," said Hanganji, "but I'm not going to." "What?" I said. "When you took refuge, you promised me that you would jump into boiling water or walk on fire if I asked you to. Now, it's not even boiling water or fire. Why have you decided to back out?" Hanganji had nothing to say. He thought it over. "If you appoint some Dharma-protecting gods to take care of me..." "Don't shilly-shally," I said. "If you're going to go, go, but don't vacillate." He said no more and followed me. When we arrived, the girl was lying on the bed with her head on the pillow and her bottom sticking up in the air. It was an embarrassing sight. Her eyes were as wide as those of a cow, and she glared with rage at me. I asked the girl's family, "What is the cause of the illness?" They told me that 7 or 8 days earlier, an old woman around age 50 had been sitting beside an isolated grave outside the village. She was wearing a dark blue gown and had braided her hair backwards in 2 plaits that went up her head in back and hung down across her temples. She was wearing yellow trousers and shoes, and she was crying mournfully beside the grave. Hearing her cries, the elderly Mrs. Xiao went to comfort her, but she continued to cry, "Oh, my person! Oh, my person!" and kept looking for her person. Finally, she stopped crying, and the two of them walked to the village gate. There must have been a spirit guarding the gate because the old woman wouldn't go in. The village was surrounded by a wall and had a gate on each of the 4 sides. Mrs. Xiao went in, but the old woman stayed outside the gate crying. At that moment, Xia Zunxiang's horse cart returned to the village. When it reached the gate, the horse saw the woman and shied in fright, for horses can recognize things that people cannot see. As the horse cart went careening through the gate, the old woman followed it. Probably the spirit who guarded the gate had his back turned, and in the confusion, she went sneaking through. The old woman ran to the house of Mr. Yu Zhongbao and continued to look for her person. She looked at Mr. Yi and then ran out of the house, where she was surrounded by 30 or 40 curious onlookers who jeered at her. "Stupid old woman, what's your last name?"
"I don't have a last name."
"What's your first name?" they asked.
"I don't know, I'm a corpse," she said.
They looked at her as if she were a freak. She continued to walk as if in a stupor until she reached the back wall of Xia Wenshan's estate. She then threw her hat over the 8-foot wall and in one jump leapt right over it. No one else could have jumped over the wall, but she made it.
"The stupid old woman knows kung fu!"
the crowd screeched, and they ran around and went in through the front gate to watch her.
Xia Wenshan's son, Xia Zunchuan, who had also taken refuge on the 24th, ran in the door.
"Mama,
Mama, the stupid old woman is in our house, but don't be afraid.
His mother looked out the window but saw nothing strange. When she turned around, there was the old woman crawling up on the brick bed. She was halfway on the bed and halfway on the floor.
What do you want?
Shouted the mother, but the old woman made no reply. Seeing the old woman's strange behavior, the mother and her daughter began immediately to recite the mantra. Just as they recited the first line of the mantra,
Namohaladanodolayaya,
the old woman slipped to the floor and lay inert, exactly like a corpse. Seeing that, the family was greatly upset. If somebody were to die in their home, it would not be good. They went for the sheriff. When the sheriff saw the old woman lying on the floor as if she were dying, he picked her up with one hand and set her outside. Then he took her to the village courthouse for questioning.
"Where do you come from?"
he asked. "And why have you come here?"
"Don't ask me," she said. "I'm a corpse. I have no name and no home. I just live wherever I am."
Frightened by her strange talk and behavior, the sheriff escorted her at pistol point some 50 paces outside the village. But when he returned to the village gate, she was right behind him. He took her 70 paces and she followed him back again. Finally, he and his 3 deputies took her 150 paces outside the village and said,
"Get out or get shot,"
and they fired 2 shots in the air. The old woman fell to the ground in terror, thinking the shots were thunder, which had destroyed her before. This time, she didn't follow them back to the village. When the sheriff and his men returned, they heard that Xia Wenshan's daughter was sick, not speaking, eating, or sleeping, but just lying on the bed, staring in rage with her head on the pillow and her bottom sticking up in the air. She didn't eat for 7 or 8 days. Before we went to Xia Wenshan's home, I said to Han Ganji, "You said that if we tried to handle the matter, we would die. Well, I would rather die than not save one of my disciples. First of all, I must save those who have taken refuge with me. I can't just stand by and let them die. Secondly, I must save the demon. You say that no one can control her, but she has committed so many offenses, there's bound to be someone who can subdue her. If she were to be destroyed, it would be a great pity, for she has cultivated diligently for many years. Even if she has enough power to kill me, I'll still save her. Finally, I must save all living beings in the world, and if I don't subdue her now, in the future many people will be harmed by her. For these 3 reasons, then, I'm going to work." Just then the sheriff happened by and overheard us saying that the old woman was a demon.
"No wonder," he exclaimed. "That's why I was able to pick her up with one hand, just as if there were nothing there at all. It didn't occur to me at the time, but now I realize she's a demon."
We then had to find the demon. How did we do that? There are 5 kinds of dharmas in the Sarangama Mantra. One is the dharma for extinguishing calamities. If you are due to suffer a calamity, you can use this dharma to avert it. There is also the dharma for creating auspiciousness, which turns inauspicious events into auspicious ones. With the dharma of summoning and hooking, you can catch goblins, demons, and ghosts no matter how far away they are. There is also the dharma of subduing and conquering, which allows you to subdue any demon that comes. I employed these dharmas from the Sarangama Mantra to summon the as-you-will demon woman. When she entered the room, she had about her an intense and nauseating stench. She came in and tried to put her magic weapon, the black hat, on my head, but couldn't get it on me. Then she took out her round balls and tried to hit me, but they missed my body. Both of her magic weapons had failed. Knowing she was finished, She turned to run, but when she first arrived, I had set up an invisible boundary that would trap her no matter where she tried to go. The gods, dragons, and others of the Eightfold Division of Dharma Protectors watched her from the left, right, front, rear, above, and below. Seeing that she couldn't get away, she knelt and wept. I then spoke the Dharma for her. I explained the Four Noble Truths, the 12 causes and conditions, and the 6 perfections. She immediately understood, resolved to realize Bodhi, and asked to take refuge with the Triple Jewel. I accepted her and gave her the name Vajra, as you will, maiden. She followed me around to save people, but her basic makeup was that of a demon, and no matter where she went, she carried her overwhelming stench. Seeing that it wouldn't do for her to follow me, I sent her to Lei Fa Mountain in Jiaohe County, Jilin Province, to cultivate in the exquisite cave of the 10,000 Saints. I had sent many of my strange and unusual disciples there to cultivate, and I have also been there myself. She cultivated vigorously and soon attained spiritual powers and could rescue people. When she rescued them, she didn't like it to be known, since good done hoping others will know is not true good, and evil done in secret for fear that others will know is truly great evil. Thus, the former demon woman became one of the Buddha's followers. Why is the cave called the Exquisite Cave of 10,000 Saints? It's said to be exquisite because it has 3 entrances, which are mutually visible to each other. It's like a glass cup in that one can see in from the outside and out from the inside. The 3 entrances to the cave are mutually connected. Inside the cave, there is a temple made of bricks and lumber that were carried up the steep mountain crags on the backs of goats. One goat could carry 2 bricks or a piece of lumber at a time. Off the western entrance of the cave, there is another cave called the Cave of Laozi. Off the eastern entrance is the Dripping Water Cave, which drips enough water to satisfy a troop of 10,000 men and horses. The cave in the back is called the Cave of Patriarch Ji, named after Ji Xiaotang, a native of Manchuria who, in the Ming Dynasty, subdued 5 ghosts, one of whom was the Blackfish Spirit. The Blackfish Spirit was a Ming Dynasty official in Beijing called Blackie the Great. His last name was Black, but he wasn't a human. He was a fish. Ji Xiaotang knew this and was determined to capture him. He knew that Blackie would pass by the mountain one day, and so he waited for him. When he passed by, Ji Xiaotang released thunder from the palm of his hand and killed him. No one actually knows how many caves there are at Lei Fa Mountain. Each time you count them, the number is different. 72 today, 73 tomorrow, and 70 the day after that. A man once went there and saw 2 old men playing chess in a cave. When he coughed, the 2 long-bearded men said to themselves, "How did he get here?" And then the stone gate of the entrance closed by itself. The man knelt there seeking the truth from them until he finally died. His grave may still be seen outside the stone door cave. How sincerely he sought for the truth. There are many spirits and immortals up in the mountain. One was a man named Li Mingfu, who had mastered Gong Fu and could run as fast as a monkey. Once I visited the cave at 4 in the morning and saw him bowing to the Buddha. His hair, which he never washed, was held by a hairpin and matted in a lump that weighed about 5 or 6 pounds. His facial features, eyes, nose, and mouth, and his body were very small, but his body was strong. He alone could carry 2 heavy railroad tracks, where it would take 8 ordinary men to carry one. He would tuck one track under each arm. No one knew how old he was or where he was from. He was one of the strange men I met there. These are not stories that I made up. They are true events. If you believe them, fine. If you don't believe, that's also fine. It's all up to you.